Hey, Don, thank you for coming in. You have a tremendous background as an innovator and CEO and entrepreneur. And thank you for coming in and sharing so many of your insights with our audience.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So one of the questions that my audience is always curious about, my audience is quite diverse. They're CEOs, investors, but also scientists and also people who have typically engineering backgrounds or some kind of technical background. So the audience is primarily technical, but they're always curious about, what were the inflection points in your life that made this wonderful career that you have today? And it could be when you were 2 or 3 or 5 years old, or could be in school, mentors, university, or even startups and things like that you've done.
That's a great question. When I look back at my life, I've had some very big influences both on each side of my family. So my grandfather was a businessman, entrepreneur, extremely innovative, very strong at sort of working with people, sales, had a lot of integrity. So I think I learned a lot of sort of business acumen, I think, from him, around sort of the importance of integrity in particular in business. And my father was a scientist, and so I've really been sort of comfortable working in both realms of science and business, and having them as models. And I think for me, it's interesting when I look at my career, it wasn't necessarily intentional, but I've very much sort of worked at the intersection of science and technology and business. Although I don't have a business background myself, sorry, a technology background myself, I've obviously have been working in advanced technology now for 25 years. I was not an engineer, but yeah. So that was those were both very big influences in me that I see imprinted upon who and how I am today.
Well, that's really interesting. You talk about your grandfather being this sort of inspiration for you, and I can see from a business standpoint, maybe an entrepreneurship standpoint, and then your father being a scientist, so you can see the technical aspects or the curiosity parts, probing on the boundaries of things that are interesting. But you ended up with a BA in sociology from the University of Colorado. So what decided you to go to sociology and not into pure entrepreneurship in it early on, or a tech background early on?
There's a bit of vulnerability in answering this question, and I'm going to go ahead and step into it. But I had a twin who was here I was a college athlete and a straight A student, and I had a twin that was battling a drug addiction. And I remember being so sort of feeling helpless and a bit perplexed about her situation that I committed my college studies towards learning everything that I could around drug use, treatment, why people sort of, go down that route, what can be done about it, and so forth. That was why I studied sociology. And she has since sort of put her life on track and has done well. But looking back at it, I never studied technology, I never studied business. But sociology is the study of human systems. And I think that has served me so well. When I think about having a liberal arts degree, learning how to research, learning how to write is fundamental, I think, in business. And so many people try and run companies through spreadsheets and formulas and, sort of a rather impersonal approach to it. And I think I started my first company at the age of 24. It was an internet company in 1995. And it was funny, my first business plan was 135 pages long because my background was in research. So, but what I learned was, particularly because I didn't have those backgrounds. Now, I read a lot of business books to educate myself, but I learned of the importance upon finding and sort of bringing incredible people to the table and thinking about how systemically, we bring this diversity of background and experience to blend together in a way to advance things that often haven't been done. And so I think many times, you know, the CEO that is too much of a subject matter expert will bring an implicit bias to the approach that sometimes having that openness of being able to bring in new DNA and new ideas, you know, like art or social theory, it's oftentimes not something completely new. It's sort of the assembly of existing components in new ways that creates the innovation. And I think I very much approach business in the same way. And I've had some very innovative companies as a result of that.
I mean, I found in my life, you know, when I come across people who have this sort of experience, disruption in their lives in some way and in their family, but it's also creates opportunities of insight,
yeah,
and diversity and inclusion. I find that in general, they're probably the most flexible in their thinking. And some of them are very innovative. So I can see how that drives your innovative spirit, because you've got this background in sociology, which is driven from what happened in your family. And it then made you think in a broader way from a humanity standpoint. And then you acquire business by actually reading everything you can. So it's not like when you go to school and you're forced to learn business. You did because you wanted to learn business. And then you acquire tech experience because you wanted to learn tech experience, and then you're bringing all that broad capability and founding, or you know, being involved in the early internet and being involved in internet companies. And in fact, you architected some of the early most successful companies, like Cosmix, which was acquired by US Web in 1997, and online outdoor realtor retailers to say Alteryx and so on. Can you talk about some of the lessons you learned then from working with business, but also with really tech-based companies? And, you know, what are the takeaways besides, you know, thinking in a diverse way, not just being in a little corner or siloed? What are some of the other takeaways?
Yeah, I'm just getting some bright sun over here. I can set this here real quick. Sorry. There we go. Yeah, it's a really good question. It's been such a journey sort of looking through it. I think I recognized with my first company that I wanted to experience the experience and make $1. It wasn't really about money. It was about surviving that experience and learning and creating value for everybody involved. And I definitely brought kind of a methodology and approach to what I called a convergence of ideas and technology. So I would look at industries that were sort of colliding and create a converged company from the outset. And I did this over and over again. And as time passed, what I realized was that there was a significant need for advanced information technology in more staid, large sort of sectors. And so I began to think of my career as, you know, how can I bring internet technology and then later AI, you know, machine learning into the realm of more traditional business to advance the way things are done. And I did that in retail. I did it in construction. I've done it in advertising. I did it in ocean, the GIS and robotics. And so I find that diversity of experience is really the value. As we moved beyond information technology into the integration of deep math and real advanced technology in the software environment, even more became unlocked, because I realized that, you know, there was a huge need and a huge opportunity to merge these skills, and that a small company that was focused could innovate and out innovate the biggest of the big companies with unlimited budgets and unlimited effort, because of the dedication to that work. I think a large company sort of bring an implicit bias into what they're doing, that that never allows them to sort of take in the capabilities and build that at the foundation, the core of the company, and then consequently the code that becomes that company. So it's been a real process of learning. And I find as I get older, holding more humility and realizing that I don't always know what's best, but I know how to hire the best, has really served me well.
So, so we talked about this, Cosmics, and then this Alteryx, and then Wide Mile, and you got companies that got acquired, and then you did this OneOcean, an Ocean Data Commons initiative with cloud software and data exchanges for seafloor data. So this very technical analytics, foundation. And then you have this Olus Robotics, and, the first AI software for remote robotics in space, underwater, nuclear environments, and so on. Are you still part of any of those companies now, or do you have some equity in those companies yet?
Yeah. So the most recent, in the last 8 years up until last year, I was CEO of Olus Robotics. Originally, it was called Blue Haptics, but I am the largest shareholder, and I'm still on the board of that company. I'm very closely involved with that business. I since 2006, I've really been directed to sort of choosing my work based on impact, and really have worked to hold true to that. I used to be in technology to pursue money to then make a difference with my money. And then in 2006, I had a bout with cancer. It was a bit of an existential sort of situation in my life where I realized came in touch with my mortality. And I realized that accumulating money and then making a difference with money was sort of a deferred game. And that you can't necessarily defer things in life, that there was technology that was needed to be brought to bear to help address significant problems facing humanity that need to be developed and could be developed, can also make money along the way. And so I had a green building company. I did OneOcean, and then from there worked in the robotics realm. So Olus became really, while still doing that work, it became an industrial company, sort of doing remote management and troubleshooting for industrial robots. And when that happened, I stepped out of the CEO role, promoted the founder to be CEO, and sort of brought myself back to the realm of impact. So I opened myself up for impact again, and that's when Sysmeta was launched. But I'm very involved with Olus. OneOcean unfortunately didn't make it for a variety of reasons, but that happens in this world, and I think I learned a lot of lessons in that one. That was my first company as a hired CEO that I hadn't started the company, and I learned the importance of managing up as well as managing down, and also set a requirement that I be involved on any board of any company I'm involved with going forward, so that we can make the proper decisions from a governance perspective. But, those are all the lessons that we learn. And, I think when I look back at my career and I think about what I'm doing now, those were all really critical building blocks for me to build my expertise and my knowledge to sort of, to be here leading and facilitating Sysmeta and what we're working on today.
So before we move on to Sysmeta, you talk about having this sort of collision with impact and making that part of your journey. And then you had a personal health challenge, and that really clarified that you want to get into impact. And then you moved out of Olus Robotics. But before you leave that company, and you're still the largest shareholder, you have some amazing clients. Can you talk a little bit about some of the clients that you have for Olus?
Yeah, so Olus spun out of the Applied Physics Lab here at the University of Washington. It was originally surgical robotic software that was applied to subsea robots with the Department of Defense and the U.S. Navy to help with diffusing and cleanup of bombs and ordnance and test ranges. And we were sort of focused initially on the US Navy and DoD. Those are long-term research projects. So we commercialized that technology out of there for oil and gas applications for underwater robots. So we built the first digital interface and AI for subsea ROVs, or $5 million robots that build and maintain infrastructure underwater. So we work with a lot of the largest oil and gas companies. And it's, again, sort of being true to my mission of impact, it's about doing work safely and responsibly, and reducing accidents and errors, and helping to overcome accidents and errors when they happen. So I'm a very pragmatic person. I see that as important work to be done. So from there, NASA had learned what we had built, said, you know, we've got the need to run robots remotely. And we'd done very innovative work around running ROVs over satellite, for example, running them remotely. So you don't have to be tethered and steaming a ship at $50,000 a day out to work on an asset. And so NASA funded us to take that software that we built for the subsea manipulators and robots and extend it to robots on the space station, so that you could use resources from the ground to run robots and experiments rather than precious astronaut resources. So, and then we worked with Maxar on the Artemis program as well, supporting there. So that was really the extension of software that was built for a subsea robot to be used on a humanoid robot and other robots in space. And we realized that we could architect and extend that software for all robots. And so from there, we began doing work for supporting the U.S. National Labs on nuclear material handling, working with Dow Chemical on robots for cleaning and inspecting chemical tanks instead of dropping humans inside them. And then from there to large, I'm not allowed to say who, but two of the largest tech companies with the largest data center operations in the world. So we brought the technology on land for remote mobile operations. But all of that was really super advanced, still in R&D. And it wasn't until we really realized that there's 3 million robots out there in the industrial world that still require humans on site to fix them when there's a problem. And so the whole promise of robots was lights out operations, but if you need humans there to troubleshoot them, or your whole line is down, if a robot is down, then you're not sort of delivering on that promise of robots. So we took the remote ability to operate robots, and then began to apply it to universal robots, ABB, kind of the large scale industrial robots that you see and, you know, most people think of when they think of robots. So it's really exciting that, you know, because we had built that technology to run on multi-million dollar robots that were thousands of feet underwater, it was highly robust and reliable software. So I think, to everybody's surprise, when we brought that to the world of industrial, everything worked beautifully. And we're seeing, you know, OLIS is really on an amazing trajectory right now, because people are realizing that, like everything else, robots need to go digital and need to go need to sort of follow the digital services path that everything else has as well, for efficiency and scale. And so it's, yeah, we work with some very, very large companies across a lot of different sectors in that technology. And I think we've innovated a lot and have some incredible patents around the use of 3D information and remote capabilities to do precise things from afar. And I think as we see more adoption of robots in the field, that technology will continue to come to bear in some critical sectors going forward. So I'm really excited about OLIS and what's happening there.
Yeah, and I guess I'm curious, I would imagine that a certain percentage of OLIS would be like NDA, classified security clearance work or something like that. Am I right? Some of it must be in that realm.
So yes and no. I mean, but I'm very careful. I come from a long line of Quakers. We're pacifists. You know, I think very I see a lot of responsibility in my role as a steward for the technology that's built. And I set a mandate very early in OList, and I think the same is with SysMeta, that we, you know, need to ensure that this technology is used for good and for benevolent purposes. And I think so building the IP and the patents and the protections to, and really thinking around how, from an ownership perspective, from a contractual perspective, and from who we sell the company to, that we think, always think about that stewardship first sort of approach in the responsible application of technology. But I think the needs of, you know, cleaning up and managing nuclear waste and are so great that, you know, we need to develop these capabilities and continue to advance capabilities, but we need to do it responsibly.
So Don, I mean, I can definitely see you having this outstanding commitment about, you know, advanced technologies. You've been at the forefront since the 90s, but you also have this social conscience, and you think about the environmental impact and the stewardship aspect, and very much a long-term pioneer in the internet and internet applications, analytics, big data, and so on. So these things are so commonplace today. In fact, I'm doing a keynote at the end of this week, and part of my keynote title is on Zeta. I call it Zeta AI, or Zeta generative AI, because of all of this chat around things like ChatGPT that came out and all the excitement over it and large language models and so on. But you've been at the heart of this for more than two decades, right? And so it's kind of amazing. But then you get into SysMeta. So can you talk about how that story developed? You know, what is SysMeta about? How did you get into SysMeta? And then we'll talk about SysMeta.
Yeah, so, you know, as I mentioned, I sort of resigned from the CEO role last year and at OList, and I opened myself up to what was next, not quite knowing what that was. So I was advising a handful of companies and then became connected to a group who now is co-founders of my companies called Leaders on Purpose. And Leaders on Purpose works with CEOs and executives and governments around the world to facilitate purpose-driven leadership and best practices of how to implement that. So operating in balance to the environment, to the welfare of employees, consumers, and sort of moving beyond just a profit first model to one where a more balanced approach. And so they brought me into SysMeta, actually, and sort of recognizing that them, and along with my other partner, Manuel, had sort of seen a need for technology and AI to support the transition, sustainable transition that companies and governments are challenged with doing. And so my SysMeta was really born out of a partnership between Leaders on Purpose and my partner, Manuel Megalos. Manuel had a background working with building technology for British intelligence, mapping terror networks and human trafficking networks, and building using the intelligence of those networks to reverse engineer outcomes, in that case of catching bad guys. But he recognized that that methodology could be applied to businesses, large corporations, asset managers, to build intelligence around supply chains and value chains and optimize the information and the organization of those supply chains and value chains for desired outcomes, particularly sustainable outcomes. And so that was the launch of the company. They asked me to be the CEO last December. We assembled a team to work on that, developed an incredible blueprint for technology to service and support that. The methodology is known, like often it is in AI, it's known as well. It's implementation of it and the application of the tools for that. And I think what we've seen is there's so much complexity in the realm of big business and governments that people don't know where to start. And we have too much information, the information is too siloed, but I think we have too many models and too many theories that aren't we don't understand how they work together and they work well. So we've seen a lot of component technology developed that in and of itself is almost commoditized. It's almost commodity, but it's how do we facilitate technology and people to solve real world problems, and not just solve the problems, but actually create better ways of doing things. And so this isn't, so I think, you know, Sysmeta is around sort of almost like the neuroplasticity that we have as humans of doing that at scale collectively, you know, for cities, governments, corporations. And, you know, we're working on some really exciting projects, and we're, I think, recognizing that not only can we develop technology for this, but we can also harness and empower, even looking at acquiring and integrating other companies and tools into the system, but all really focused on sustainable transition. So it's really exciting. We've got a large corporation that we're about to, very, very large company that we're about to kick off with. We've got a big effort in Africa that we're involved in. But, you know, this isn't just, you know, just for the large corporations. This technology can be used at scale to facilitate tens of millions of farmers to adopt regenerative capabilities and regenerative farming techniques and capabilities. It can be used to transform education. So it's, you know, I think a really exciting and appropriate sort of technology to help society sort of work through the challenges that we have. We clearly have supply chain issues that need to be addressed and need to be streamlined, but we have so many resources and so much technology and so much money in this world. We grow 1.5 times of food to feed the entire planet, yet we have people who are starving. And so to me, these are problems that with better coordination and understanding and being able to read signals and bring these models to work together cohesively, that we can really drive efficiency in the way governments and businesses are run and in ways that we've never seen before. And so it's really exciting to be on the forefront of assembling all of these abilities in under one roof in a cohesive technology and solution package to help.
You know, I've been embedding AI in some fashion, I guess, expert systems and things like acknowledge systems back in the 80s, and then some systems I was working on. And then you saw this sort of winter happen where neural networks just weren't delivering on the promise. And then, of course, with the scaling of GPUs and things like that, you have Geoffrey Hinton and that really famous ImageNet, where he did significant improvements, and that got the attention of everybody. So early on, I've been interviewed people like Andrew Ng, who worked on Google Brain, and Jeff, some of the leaders in this area, including Google and so on. And now it's kind of mainstay, and you see all of this excitement because of the large language models and transformers and diffusion models and things like that. So it's really, really, really interesting. But I think people still have a problem grasping, you know, they think, oh yeah, it's going to solve problems, it's going to optimize, it's going to make things better. And you can get these big ideas about what it's going to do. But can you walk us through, like, let's say the World Food Program, they have 100 aircraft, I think, 100 aircraft, they have 30 ships. They have about maybe 7,000 trucks. They have 24,000 people distributed around the world. Definitely they're interested in optimizing supply chain on the food side, and they're interested in farmers and optimizing how they grow crops and things like that. Can you walk us through what Sysmeta can do to make them better?
Right. So because we haven't launched it publicly yet, so I'm going to be a little won't get into the specifics on it, but clearly you have a lot of assets there that in and of themselves on the physical basis, right, are consuming and deploying a lot of fuel. So it's like there's the aspect of the utility of just the infrastructure around streamlining costs and streamlining the carbon footprint and sort of emission output, greenhouse gas emissions across that size of a supply chain. So when you look at the utilization of and maximizing the utilization of that alone, sort of understanding and being able to map that, not in a way that a data scientist can work with, but in a way that the CFO or the CEO or the executive directors or the operational leaders can leverage information on the fly in a natural language environment, right? It's about that accessibility to that information. But you're talking about an incredible amount of information and diverse data sets that need to be brought into a uniform environment of visibility and being able to work with that. So that's step one. Then if you look at the aspect of perishables, right? And perishables, knowing that certain foods have certain life, if it's perishables or non-perishables, but what the lifespan or the life requirement of those perishables might be, and being able to at scale understand and know where that is on a dynamic basis allows you then to begin to optimize the movement or the shipment of those so that you're reducing food waste and food loss, things like that. And that's just what we've seen, that oftentimes there's not enough ability to get the information on a real-time basis against real-time models and inputting into like, for example, real-time fuel utilizations across different vehicle sets or whatever that might be, and thinking about how you can transition that as quickly as possible to reducing your greenhouse gases to the food aspect. You're talking about assembly of an incredible amount of information, and that needs to be processed quickly and in real time and accessible to the decision makers that need it. And we're not just making this up. There's models that we've seen, but haven't been applied in the realm of sustainability or supply chain. And I sort of would argue that the value chain and sustainability is really one of the same, that these are increasingly financial decisions that also are the right decisions to be made, because it's really about ironing out waste and inefficiency. I think that being able to access that information across distributed networks and to normalize that access and visibility to it becomes really important. And there's tools that can be used and leveraged for the data orchestration, the ingestion organization of unstructured and structured data, the AI and analysis of that information to really get your hands around what's causing what to happen, so that you can then facilitate or streamline sort of those actions. So it's really clarifying against a desired objective what the most important things are to be doing, and then tracking and understanding how and measuring that impact and response in real time, but all in a way that is like that sort of connects the theory to the action. Like, we have a lot of intention, a lot of theory, and a lot of data, but there's a big breakdown between that and right action. And so ultimately what we're trying to do is connect the two in a very clear way for decision makers and operational executives. I don't know if that's, so yeah. It's really, yeah.
I mean, people would then be saying, okay, can I see a demo? I want to see this in action. And I guess the use case, if you get a use case coming up, you know when that be released or?
Yeah, we have about three different projects right now that are, I think, quite close to kicking off. And so I love to build technology in the context of a customer. So everything's architected. We're implementing for these projects, I think summer of 23, sort of July, August of 23, we should be coming out with it. We have fantastic projects that I think that are excellent applications for this, where, unfortunately, I'm not at liberty to say who, because we're under NDA with them until that comes out, but I think we will be able to talk about these in time. So,
Yeah, that's interesting. And then, of course, there's the Leaders on Purpose summits and different events. And so I guess at one of the events, you can do this grand showing. This is what we've done. And maybe you can bring some of those partners on stage and say, yeah, it's working and it's really, really useful or something. You said summer, so that could hit the UNGA next year, right?
Yeah, I think that would be a good goal for that. But it's, I think, you know, and in the grand scheme of things, that's not that far out. I think we, you know, we're ready to go. And I think, you know, we spent a year in planning and architecting. We've identified the partners, all the component technologies and capabilities that we need here. We're not building everything from scratch. We're leveraging a lot of tried and true capabilities, but stitching them together to work in ways that hasn't been done before. And so we're, you know, I think, and it's all grounded in known methodology, right? So I think that's what I'm excited for. You know, people who oftentimes understand the methodology don't know what's possible on a technology perspective. And people who understand technology and component technology don't know how to orchestrate it in a way to drive real change. And so I think that being the sort of weaving those two together with something as important as accelerating our transition to regenerative, to net zero, you know, or net positive operations is really important. It's important to do this as quickly as we can. And so, yeah, we're really, really excited about what we have and what we're working on right now.
So Don, you know, this is really exciting and you know, you got a huge audience that you can go to market on, right? Because you're working with the Leaders on Purpose community and there's a lot of trust with that community. So what's for Don post SysMeta?
Yeah, that's a great question. I see myself, you know, I'm committed to building this and helping to build this company. And as I said, to maintaining the stewardship role and maintaining the governance and the ownership, and so that we can continue that stewardship through the life of this technology. I also want to build a parallel foundation to contribute this technology to developing countries, NGOs, and science. I think we live in a world of haves and have-nots as it is. It's part of what's created a lot of the problems that we have. And so I think looking at ways that we can deploy this technology to the benefit of you know, smallhold farmers, for example, you know, is something that I want to see through. And then I think ultimately, longer term, there's an opportunity to, and I see myself getting involved more on the policy and governmental side. And used to do a lot of government-based work in my younger years. And I see myself coming back to that with sort of deploying this technology to facilitate what I call evidence-based governance. And, you know, sort of as we learn to eliminate waste and to drive sort of optimal response and management in the business realm and the social realm, I think that we need to and have to bring that capability to governments and governance of countries and communities. And I think that's going to take some work. And so I think understanding how we can facilitate that and working with people on the policy side to see that we, you know, manage our public resources with efficiency, that we're managing, you know, corporate resources and investment resources is important. So I think that's something I'm very interested in working on and tackling after we get SysMeta up and running.
And I guess with your existing work, you have the relationships to do this, or you're going to do this through other bodies outside of the UN, or using the UN as a platform, in essence, or community? Or are you thinking of other communities to work on the government side? Government is interesting, complex, right?
So. Yeah, it is. I think it's and there's also sort of public-private partnerships too. I think you look at, there's some really interested blending finance models that, you know, coming through. So looking at how we can bridge those gaps as well, I think is interesting. But, you know, we've had, interest from the World Bank of, you know, finance ministers sort of adopting and using this technology to sort of ensure that funds that are being directed are being invested appropriately, and that we have the traceability and the kind of the management parameters in sight with those funds to be used. So I think, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to support those types of things. So yeah, we'll see. I think we have good connections right now, I think, with the UN and the Leaders on Purpose, and, you know, and I think those will just only grow as our technologies and our capabilities grow. So yeah, that sort of, we'll see. I'm sure that will happen and that will come to bear. Yeah.
So Don, I only have one more question, but I'm just going to sort of summarize where we went. You know, you talked about some of your early inflection points from your grandfather on the entrepreneurship side, the science side from your dad, and some of the personal family challenges that got you to think more on the impact, and that resulted in a sociology degree. But sociology is a really transdisciplinary or interdisciplinary kind of way of thinking, and you brought that into, you know, founding or being the early architect to innovate for a number of companies, of which they've exited. And we talk about Cosmic and Alltrek and White Mile and One Ocean and Olus, of which you stepped down as being CEO, but, you know, you're still the major shareholder, and they're just amazing work that you've done and a track record in social and environmental, but also in advanced technology, and a longtime pioneer on the internet and enterprise applications and so on. And then you yourself personally had a health challenge, and that got you thinking even more about impact. And you met the Leaders of Purpose founders, and you decided to say, hey, I want to go on board on this ASMETA. And, you know, you're really focused on this idea of system mapping and AI to develop intelligence analytics for complex value chains. You talked about that, and streamlined operations. And we use the World Food Program as an example on the logistics side and the infrastructure. It can help manage that, but even on the food side, because it's perishable and so on. And we talked about how, you know, post, you want to get into more of the policy, maybe working on the governmental side, which you did early in your career, but now you want to get back to that, you know, private public partnerships and using the relationships to do that. So I'm trying to sort of summarize what we discussed. And then now the last question is, what recommendations do you want to leave the audience?
I think that I have a big recommendation, which is that we have agency. And I think that it's interesting when I talk to people about what we're doing, they're surprised by the optimism that I have. And, you know, I've one of the big motivations, I have children, is a very personal, you know, thing, but I think that we can work through the challenges that are facing humanity right now. And we can build what's next. We have to show the way and provide the way. And I'm not saying I'm the answer to that. I'm just focused on contributing and doing what I can to play the part. But I think if there's anything I want to instill in people, it's that there's, you know, if we're all committed to making a difference and making the world a better place, then the world becomes a better place. And I think it's really a time for us to sort of think of the context of our capabilities, not just in the pursuit of money, but in the pursuit of education and wellness and well-being and climate resiliency and food and water security. And like, we have so much ingenuity, we have so many resources, and the world is actually quite resilient when given the opportunity. So I think that's just sort of it's a call to help and to participate and to realize that we have the agency and the ability to make a difference if we commit to it.
Yeah, I'm just reflecting on your recommendation that, you know, we have the ability to help and we have resiliency and so on. But sometimes people think, oh man, the problems are so big, but they can do it at the local neighborhood level, and then they can expand that to a citywide or a community within the city, to county if it's in the U.S., and then you can expand to national and global and so on. So you don't have to think big. You can do it with your neighbor.
I think local is as important as international. Absolutely. And I think and we've seen, you know, countless examples of people who have stepped up locally and transformed their own community. And so, yeah, it's at all scales. Yeah.
So, Don, thank you for coming in today. You're just an outstanding example of innovation and compassion and empathy, diversity, inclusion, innovation. It really hits all the hallmarks of just an amazing career, wonderful work, and it continues. And it's really for the benefit of humanity and Earth ecosystems and across all domains. So thank you again for coming in.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it. It's been great.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.